Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Tim Murray of the College Football Betting Podcast and VSiN, VSiN Primetime will join us. We'll do a lot of college football today. It's been a little while. I've been doing a lot of baseball for good reason. Been doing a bunch of NFL, and I'll get to some deadline stuff here in a minute as the Jets just completely strip it, their team down to, whatever wasn't nailed down was traded. I actually thought they could have traded more. Once you start, why stop? But we'll get to that in a minute. But I'll start college football. College football rankings are coming out right now, the first official rankings. And just to show you what I think of them, I'm not even waiting to react to do it because, to me, it goes one ear and out the other. I know you'll hear a lot about it. People reacting to the rankings, people having discrepancies and pointing out flaws and inconsistencies. The reason I don't pay attention, it's so early with this stuff, and they can make or break the rules as they want. They can move teams up without winning. They can move teams down without losing. And if you can move teams up or down without the result really mattering, if you can move a team down without them doing anything deserve being moved down, without them losing a game, what is the point of getting all worked up here in November? We're going to decide in mid-December. We got 5 or 6 weeks. That is the one thing. When you see the first ranking, you know you're in the stretch run. You're in crunch time here. That is the one kind of hint of it. But I don't get too worked up into what the committee's thinking or them tipping their hand. They can go back and change whatever they want. And I feel like sometimes they do things just to draw attention, just to draw a little controversy. But until we see the final one, it's really not something that I think is really worth debating or discussing. Just before I get to some of my plays here for the weekend, how about the loss for Miami? Oh my goodness, I bought into it. Crystal ball, I'm the biggest crystal ball skeptic there is. I can't believe I got suckered again. Not again, because I don't remember too many times I was a believer, but I thought the talent could outweigh the coach, and I thought if nothing else, the coach would catch up to him in the playoffs, the semis, maybe the national championship. Eventually, when he's playing other playoff teams, yeah, he might do something stupid. But if the numbers they were to win the whole thing, 16-1, 18, 22-1, I think first gave it out at 22-1. I thought they were a playoff team. I thought they were a deep playoff team. What he did Saturday against SMU, again, losing is a big favorite, which has just become his staple. And he gets the ball with 25 seconds left and one timeout after SMU ties it. How often do we see these teams, mostly in the NFL, but still in college, kickers have big legs, you throw a couple passes, you start at the 30, you throw one pass near midfield, you throw another pass inside the 40, and all of a sudden you're kicking a 56-yarder, and who knows, it goes in, and you win the game. To not give yourself a chance, 25 seconds with one timeout is an eternity in college. The clock stops on a first down. I thought that was complete coaching malpractice for Cristobal, who has just been awful in these game situations throughout his career, not taking knees when he's supposed to, not once but twice, just an awful, awful situational coach, and he cost him. And I don't know how they're going to get in. They're not going to sniff the ACC title game. The one thing is, and we'll get to Tim Murray here, and we'll talk about possible college football playoff controversies and what could give the committee headaches or cause debates down the line. Everyone kind of assumes Notre Dame loses two games, they're going to get in. Yeah, Notre Dame loses two games and goes undefeated the rest of the way, and they're a two-loss team, they are probably going to get in. But if you're sitting there, the Notre Dame two-loss team and a Miami two-loss team, Miami did beat Notre Dame head-to-head. I guess you could say that the Notre Dame losses are better because they lost to Miami and A&M by a point on a bad call, while Notre Dame lost to SMU and Louisville. I guess you could make that point, but it is tough tough to just completely dismiss Miami if that's the scenario where Notre Dame and Miami both two losses and Miami did win the game head to head. That you're just going to completely ignore that and put Notre Dame in the field and leave Miami out. But Miami is very much on the outside looking in here, it looks like, on the playoff picture. So we'll talk to Tim Murray about that coming up. A couple picks quickly here. I think LSU is going to go into Bama and play very well. Everyone hated Kelly. You can't find one person to say anything good about Kelly. Former coaches, staff, guys from Central Michigan. Was it Sal and LaFleur coached under him years ago and said we got invited to a party. We thought it was a really nice gesture, and he made us chauffeur cars all night, and we agreed we'd never treat people like that. I mean, you just go down the line. Everyone could not stand the guy. I think LSU will probably play pretty well this week. There's still a lot of talent. You can still get some 10.5s. 10.5 minus 115, there's some 10.5 minus 120 out there. It's mostly moving to 10. We've seen these coaches get fired and teams play well after. I think LSU has a lot of talent. And if you look at Alabama, outgained by South Carolina, outgained by Missouri, outgained in the Tennessee game. Georgia had a yard and a half per play better. I don't think Bama is as great as this record. Obviously, the string of wins is impressive, but I think LSU is right in this game. I'll take the 10. 10.5 is still available. It's, again, a little slightly more juice. And I'll take 3.5 with Kentucky at home against Florida. I just think that last week against Florida, against Georgia, might have been kind of Florida's last reason for caring about anything. I mean, that was a rivalry game. They're coming off firing the coach themselves. They were competitive. They had that game ripped from them. Now they're going to go to Kentucky, a sleepy spot. Kentucky's played pretty well at home against Texas. Kentucky played well at home in a bunch of different spots where their defense has played well here. So I think that 3.5 on the road, Lagway's been a disaster, really up and down season for Lagway. And this is a Florida team I've liked. I've been on a bunch of times, but I think this is a tricky spot laying 3.5 here with the Gators at Kentucky. I think Kentucky will play pretty well here. And again, there are still some 3.5s here. Wouldn't be surprised if this closed 3 just for all of those reasons, just because I just question the motivation here of Florida. After a disappointing year, a lot of people thought they might be a sleeper to make the playoff. And, you know, Kentucky's coming off again a game where they won 10-3 against Auburn. That's a pretty good defense. They got destroyed by Tennessee, but that was a lot of defensive touchdowns. I think Tennessee, probably didn't deserve to win that game by as many as they did. That game got lopsided pretty quickly with all the pick sixes and defensive touchdowns. So Kentucky plus 3.5 against Florida. Kentucky's at home. And then LSU plus 10.5. against LSU. Those are both plays for me, even though, yeah, -115, -120. I think those are trending more towards 10 and 3 respectively, but those are ones I would play. But I would play them soon because those hooks might disappear. And of course, you want those half numbers, those half points on key numbers. So those are the two I like so far. Might add more. I'm interested in Mississippi State getting the points against Georgia, getting 7.5. I don't have the guts. I've seen some people that like Penn State against Indiana. I just don't have the guts to fade Cignetti. That team is just such a monster right now. And Cignetti knows the spread. He likes to run up the score. And his teams are just never flat. They're just never flat. They take care of business against these teams they're supposed to. Even last week against Maryland, it was an ugly game. They weren't really moving the ball. Next thing you know, it's like 55-10. They're just a machine right now. I think pretty clearly the two best teams in the country, Ohio State, Indiana. And then there's a gap between those two and everybody else. And I think we're looking at that being the Big 12 title game and that probably deciding the Heisman in December with both those teams being undefeated going into that game and the winning quarterback winning the Heisman. And that leads into the trade deadline because Julian Sain, the Ohio State quarterback, is not going to be NFL draft eligible this year, but he will be in 2 years. The Jets certainly going to be in the market for a quarterback. Now, if I'm them, I'm not picking a quarterback this year. I don't love Simpson. You know, Pavi, go down the line, Carson Beck. I don't really love any of these guys. That being said, what the Jets did here on Tuesday in the trade deadline, I thought was brilliant. Get Sauce Gardner out of there. Get picks. Get Quinnen Williams out of there. Get picks. A lot of picks. I think a lot of people were shocked. The price tag for Gardner, 2 ones in Mitchell, the younger receiver. More picks for Quinnen Williams. Now, I know you look back and it was just, hey, a few years ago they had the Offensive Rookie of the Year and Garrett Wilson, Defensive Rookie of the Year and Sauce Gardner. At some point, you know, you got to win games and turning these picks into players. We thought Gardner and Wilson, that was the guys you build around. Now you're going to rebuild again. You have to do it. The team stinks. These guys are making, you know, money. They're getting into, not getting older, but getting to the point where what's the point of paying them? You have no team around them. Gardner's play has really regressed the past couple years. I thought the Jets hit an absolute home run stockpiling these picks. And they're going to put themselves in a position this April where do you just try to stack the rest of the team and then find the quarterback along the way? That hasn't really worked for them. The quarterback is obviously the most important thing, and finding a coach, I think, is going to be the most important thing too, whether it's this year or next year. I don't know that Glenn is the guy. He's been awful as a head coach so far. But you can't argue with what they did, stockpiling all these assets. Now getting the players right, getting the quarterback right. There's still a lot to be determined here for the Jets, and this is going to be a long rebuild. It's not like you made this trade and you're going to look back in a year or 2 years, you're going to be ready to go. This is going to be a long rebuild, but at least you have a plan here, and I think they're doing the right thing, and that was really the most notable thing here of the trade deadline by far, is the Jets just completely tearing it down and getting a bunch of draft picks. I thought they'd go a step farther. Why not trade Breece Hall? Why not just trade everything you possibly can? I mean, if you're going to rebuild, just go all out and rebuild. We'll see what the plan is going forward. And they've passed on some good players. I mean, we'll see Thursday night with the Raiders playing the Broncos. I mean, that's a guy in Brock Bowers you could have had. That would have been a guy to build around. I think that guy's a legitimate Hall of Fame player. He is that good. And he's got to stay on the field, and he's been hurt a lot of this year. But we'll see if the Jets can turn these draft picks into players. But I think if you're a Jet fan, it's a good day and a clear sign that they do have a plan. You can't argue with the Jets in what they got back. I get why the Colts are taking a shot on it and say, you know what, we'll put him on a winning team, winning environment. Maybe we'll get the best football out of him. We'll start to look like he was, you know, the player he was the first year or two in the league. I can get that. But I think it was a trade that you had to do if you're the Jets. And they are loaded now with picks, absolutely loaded with picks. Now it's just getting the right players in. And Sand would be the guy I would target. I know you got to wait a year, and that's tricky. Do you just completely sit out the quarterback this year? And plus, you might not even be in a position to get Sand in 2 years. So setting your sights on a quarterback at two drafts from now is tricky, and it's a hard plan to plan around. Or it's a hard way to design your draft and your structure here. But that would be the guy I would target. I don't love any of these quarterbacks in this class. I think Sand is going to be a legitimate star in the NFL. Accurate, just very high floor. I can't see that guy being a bust. He's just got all the makings of a really good NFL quarterback. But again, that's a long way down the road there if you're the Jets. Quickly, Thursday Night Football. I mentioned this on the Sunday show, on the Monday show, I should say. Raiders-Broncos, we're at 9.5 now. The Broncos laying it with the Raiders to the Raiders. Raiders just coming off a game. 44 plays on defense. 74 plays on defense, 43.5 minutes on the field. So 77 plays, 43.5 minutes on the field. That's a lot of defense to be played. That being said, and now you got to play in a short week in altitude. That being said, are you really going to play this many points with Bo Nix, who has not been impressive? They pulled all of these games out of the fire. Nix hasn't been great. Their offense hasn't been great. At 9.5, you know, a 7-point teaser with, let's say, the Jags on Sunday to get that from 1.5 up to 8.5. If you got to use a 6.5-point teaser, if it's 9, that would be the only way I would look. A Jags Broncos teaser, Broncos, kind of use them with whoever you want here that's in the zone to tease. There's not a ton of options here as you look at it. You know, Falcons Colts doesn't apply. Bills Dolphins, it's a road team with the Bills, but if you can use a 7-point teaser with the Bills down to 2.5 and the Broncos down to 2.5, I think those are both plays. I'd be pretty surprised if the Broncos didn't win the game. As far as props, I mentioned Bowers. Bowers at 64.5 receiving yards. To me, he's an over. He's unstoppable. They don't have many other weapons. I know the Broncos will go into it and think, all right, this guy can't beat us. Easier said than done. I would still only look towards over 64.5 for Bowers. So those are the plays. Kentucky plus 3.5, LSU plus 10.5, Bowers over 64.5. And call it a Broncos-Bills teaser. You're going to have to pay some juice. But anything 135, 140 to get under the 3 for both of them, I think he's good. We'll see what Tim Murray thinks. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him on the College Football Betting Podcast, VSiN Prime Times. He's on the Weekend Tailgate Show. It is our great friend, the great Tim Murray. Tim, what's going on?
I think great is a little aggressive. I would say mediocre Tim Murray, but I appreciate you, the invite, Will. Big fan, obviously Ginger Power here on the program. So let's ride into week 11 of the college football season, man.
So we're recording this a little bit before the first college football rankings will come out. I always take the position, the opinion. I know people like to talk about it. It's content. The committee can make the rules, break the rules, so I don't really look at them as anything that's sacred. That being said, and we'll get to some games here and some Heisman stuff, but what is like the one scenario looking ahead that you think, uh-oh, that could be a really tough decision for the committee? Obviously, a couple years ago, it was Florida State and Bama. That was still when it was 4. Last year, SMU and Bama was an interesting one. What's the one where you look ahead and say, uh-oh, that's going to be a real difficult way to parse that out if this is how it breaks?
Yeah, I mean, I think based off of last weekend, Will, you look at what the ACC did to themselves with Miami losing to SMU, and now you've got a situation brewing where it looks pretty locked in, and Georgia Tech losing to NC State. that the ACC is going to be a one-bid league. That all being said, I don't think many of us, especially bettors, believe that Virginia is going to run the table, but they could. They have Wake Forest. They've got Duke. I think 11-1 Virginia making the ACC championship versus a Georgia Tech team that unlikely, but could they beat Georgia? I don't think so, but it's a game that they're going to play, and they went to 97 overtimes a year ago. So I think there's a scenario out there where Georgia Tech is 11-1 with a win over Georgia. How does the committee look at that? And then the Big 12. Obviously, we have a huge showdown this weekend, Will, with BYU and Texas Tech. You know, if BYU, once again, I don't think they'll beat Texas Tech, but could they? Sure. It's a football game. It's not a massive spread. It's decent size at, you know, 10.5. But if BYU wins that game on Saturday and then loses the rematch against Texas Tech in the Big 12, we're probably looking at a two-bid Big 12 as well. So I think those are some scenarios to kind of keep an eye on. Obviously, I think the SEC is fascinating. You mentioned the uh-oh scenario. Well, Texas, with three losses, right? If they are to beat Georgia and then lose to A&M, they've got some pretty nice wins on their resume with Oklahoma and hypothetically Georgia. What would they do with a three-loss Texas team? So I think that's a scenario. You look back at their week one loss to Ohio State. I know giving credit for a good loss is not something they like to do, but it's certainly worth noting. As of right now, the team who's played Ohio State the best, in theory, is Texas. So I think those are a couple interesting scenarios. Obviously, I'm a Notre Dame fan, and you know there are some unique scenarios with them because Miami now has lost two games, Will. Do you put Notre Dame ahead of two-loss Miami? I think you probably do, but there's going to be a lot of conversation saying, hey, they played each other. Miami won that game, but you look at recent form, Notre Dame's won six in a row. Miami's now dropped two in a row, or two of their last three, excuse me. So, you know, I think those are some things to keep an eye on. And then, you know, lastly, I think the Big Ten, I'm very fascinated, Will, to see how the Big Ten plays out, because I think we all agree Ohio State and Indiana are locks to get in. I don't really envision either one of those teams losing until the Big Ten championship game. I guess Ohio State, in theory, could lose again to Michigan. But, Will, who's going to get that third spot? Is it going to be Oregon? Oregon has to go on the road to Iowa, has to host USC, and has to go on the road to Washington. Could they afford one loss? Maybe. Could they afford two losses? Definitely not. So I think Oregon and that third Big Ten spot is really interesting. I think the Big Ten will definitely get three teams in, but I'm not so sure, Will, that it's definitely going to be Oregon just yet.
How many SEC teams? Is it possible we get six?
I think I was doing the math. Look, if Notre Dame loses to Pitt in 2 weeks, where they'll be a favorite, over a touchdown, probably around 10, maybe 11. If Notre Dame were to lose to Pitt, Notre Dame's out. So then you're looking at now a Pitt team that has two losses but a big win over Notre Dame. They could get tripped up because they played Georgia Tech and Miami after that. I think there is a scenario we get six. I think it's highly unlikely, but I think the more it's clearing up, it feels to me, Will, like we're going to get one ACC, one Big 12, the G5, Notre Dame, three Big 10, and five SEC. That's if I had to handicap it right now, that would be my prediction. Obviously, so much can unfold. But I think right now that's my gut feel, is that we have five from the SEC, three Big Ten, one from the other two, the G5 and Notre Dame would be my kind of gut feel right now on November 4th.
Is Heisman as simple as December Big Ten title game? It's saying in Ohio State versus Mendoza in Indiana, the winner of that's undefeated, the winner of that is the Heisman, or is it not that is a little more complicated than that?
I think the SEC is going to have an opportunity to have their say. You know, you look at Marcel Reed. He's a guy that's kind of flying under the radar a little bit. His stats aren't gaudy, but you certainly look at the big-time games that are left. Think about his closing argument, Will. He's got a chance to beat Texas and then beat Alabama, and he has a chance, I think, to be in the discussion. I also think Ty Simpson. Look, I know we all kind of get into this moment of the cycle, whether it's NBA, MLB, whatever it may be. We make our arguments for, hey, I have this ticket, this is why this guy should win the award. I do have a Ty Simpson ticket. I don't think he deserves to be the favorite right now. Do I think there's a chance that Ty Simpson could win the Heisman Trophy? Yeah, I do. I think if they finish unbeaten from here on out, you know, has a big game this weekend against LSU. Obviously, that game doesn't have as much allure as it once did. But think about what Ty Simpson has coming up. You've got LSU. You've got Oklahoma. Auburn, obviously, is not as sexy as it once was. But then you probably have Texas A&M. So I think if you're doing a simple handicap, I think your breakdown of it is accurate. It feels like it's a Julian Say and Fernando Mendoza off in that Big Ten championship. But who's to say that Ty Simpson or Marcel Reed doesn't have some, you know, monster numbers down the stretch? And, you know, Texas A&M is still undefeated, right? So this is a team that very well could run the gauntlet in the SEC and go 13-0 as an SEC champ. So I think Sayin and Mendoza are rightfully priced, but I wouldn't count out Ty Simpson or Marcel Reed just yet. I think that's it. I mean, you know, as much as I would love my guy Jeremiah Love to be in the discussion, I don't think that's likely. And I do think, fair or not, Will, as we've learned over the years, that championship weekend tends to be when most of these voters are paying attention. You know, we can have a whole discussion another day about just the antiquated and outdated way they vote for Heisman, but that's a discussion for not a gambling podcast, right? So it is what it is. That's how they vote now. It's probably not the right way to do it, but I do think the Big Ten championship more than likely is the Heisman off, but I think Marcel Reed and Ty Simpson have a shot still.
All right, let's get into some of these games. I think LSU is going to play well here. You just read some of the reports. Doesn't seem like anybody's going to miss Kelly too much, the players, people around the program. And we've seen these coaches get fired, and then the team has a little bump, whether it's new stuff on film, a little extra motivation, whatever you want to call it. LSU is getting 10. There's some 10.5 out there against Bama. I think they'll be in this game. You look at Bama, they've been outgained in a number of these wins. Missouri outgained them. Tennessee, South Carolina, you know, Georgia had better yards per play. I think this is a close game. Do you have any feel here, Bama laying 10 against LSU?
Yeah, I definitely think. I haven't bet it yet, but I think I'll probably end up, you know, splitting my unit and doing first half and full game here with LSU. You know, you've seen Alabama in these spots, Will. Now, it's at home, and it's a big rivalry game, so they're not going to overlook LSU. But you've seen Alabama under Kalen DeBoer rise to the occasion in the spots, but also kind of play with their food a little bit in some other particular spots. You know, most notably recently against South Carolina. Obviously, we could think back to the Florida State game. Both those games, granted, were on the road. But I do think LSU, and you mentioned the fired coach bump. It's been something that I've just kind of been keeping tabs on this year. It's not anything scientific, but so far this year, we've had 9 teams play post-firing. Those teams are 7-2 against the spread. Now, one of those covers was last week with Florida and the lovely knee at the goal line there from Gunnar Stockton. Personally, Will, I would have liked him to take that knee against Auburn, but he decided to leap into the end zone instead. But, yeah, I do think there is something about that fired coach bump, whether it's, you know, motivation, whether it's a team a little bit on sale, whatever it may be. I do think there's something about that. And, you know, look, LSU defensively still a very talented team. You know, offensively, they've got some questions, but I definitely could find myself gravitating towards the 10. It would definitely be dog or pass here. And I think on my card, when, you know, Matt Newmans and I do our Thursday podcast breaking down the games, I think I'll probably be on LSU. You see that double digit out there at a number of spots. So I think that's probably the way I'll roll, probably a little bit of both. I took Florida first half last week, so I think I'll kind of go back to the well a little bit here. LSU and Alabama, worth noting, coming off a bye. But I think you're going to get a really good effort here from LSU. And like you said, it doesn't feel like a lot of people are upset that Brian Kelly is gone down in Baton Rouge.
How about the other big games here? Texas Tech, you alluded to it. They're laying 10 against BYU. Anything on that game?
I think I might end up laying the chalk here. I was kicking myself last week. Will, you know, sometimes we as bettors get too cute. And I felt like that's what happened with me. I really liked Utah against Cincinnati, but I got spooked by the numbers. So I very dumbly put together a money line parlay, and I threw them in with Arkansas, and Arkansas, you know, does what they do, which is blow a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter. So my money line parlay died with Utah. But I really like this Texas Tech team. I've been impressed by them. Curious the status of LJ Martin. I think they're going to try to give him a go there for BYU. You know, you look at some of the BYU metrics, and look, give them credit. They went to Utah. They got that win. You look inside that box score. They won the turnover battle. You know, Utah missed, I think, 2 fourth down conversions in BYU territory on that, you know, Saturday evening in Salt Lake. So I'm not going to say that BYU is fraudulent, but I think they have some questions, and I think they've been fortunate at times. You know, you look back at the Colorado game. Colorado looks like an absolute disaster. BYU probably should have lost that game, right? So, you know, I look at this BYU team. They're obviously going to be jacked up for this game, as they should be. I think the early time doesn't help them out. But I think this Texas Tech team is pretty darn legit. So, for me, it would probably be looking at the favorite here in this role. I know 10 is a big number to lay, but I think there's a reason that we haven't seen much resistance come in on this BYU team. I'm kind of curious to see the health status of BYU, like I said, if LJ Martin plays. But I think for me, it would be a guns up or nothing here in this spot against BYU.
How about Texas A&M laying 7 to Missouri?
So this game is fascinating because, you know, you and I think, and many of us at VSiN don't like to lay the chalk on the road. We tend to gravitate more towards the dogs. So initially, I was looking at the dog here. What do we know about the quarterback situation in Missouri, right? I mean, Bo Prabhula is done for the year. You're looking at, what, a third-string quarterback, a freshman there for Mizzou. So I don't know what I'm going to do with this one, Will. I might stay off it here. You know, Texas A&M, this is a team that obviously I think will be heavily bet in this spot. I'm sure Moneyline parlays galore will have Texas A&M in this spot. So I really want to make a case for the dog here. I'm going to dig a little bit more. I do like Eli Drinkwitz quite a bit. So, you know, look, we saw how capable they were when Alabama came to town and they were able to get that cover, but they had Bo Prabhula. So I think that's the worry in this particular spot is what should we expect from a unproven commodity at the quarterback position. So I want to make a case for the dog, but yeah, I think that's my hesitation here right now is just that quarterback position. And could it be a situation, you know, I don't know if you remember last year, I think Drew Pine got a start and it was just an absolute catastrophe for Missouri. So I don't know if it'll be like that again, but I am a little bit hesitant to take the dog here in this spot, Will, just because of the quarterback situation there for Mizzou.
Anything else you're looking at for this weekend? We got fade Kurt Cignetti here laying 14.5 on the road? He just seems to beat everybody by 50. I don't know. You tell me any other spots you're looking at.
All right. Well, let's start with that because I'm curious your thoughts on this one. Because, look, I know we all are trying to figure out the time to go against Cignetti. And, you know, last year, before we knew full on that Cignetti was the bully that he is, and I mean that in a positive way, they just go out and they dominate. There haven't been really those letdown angles for Kurt Cignetti. So I can't do it, man. Like last week, it felt like that number was super inflated at Maryland, kind of a weird spot for Penn State coming off of with Penn State on deck. They're going to Maryland. Maryland's off a bye. I think Maryland scored the first touchdown. And then after that, it was just curtains, 55-10. So look, Cignetti seems to have everybody's ear in that locker room. They'll be ready to go. I know there's talent on this roster, Penn State, that is, but, you know, at home, it's just crazy to think. Adam Burke brought this up on Monday, Will. I think Penn State was, like, laying 31 2 years ago against Indiana, and now they're catching 2 touchdowns. It's just wild, but I can't do it, man. Like, I can't get in front of the Cignetti train right now. A couple other spots that I, you know, I like to look for situational angles, and, you know, I'm curious, you know, what you're thinking. So I'll give you 3 that I bet early this week. I like Temple going to West Point here. Army coming off of the Air Force game. Temple was embarrassed last week. I like this KC Keeler squad. I think they've done a really good job in year number 1. I'm not a big believer in that, you know, finding the motivation to get bowl eligible. But in year one for Keeler, you look at the schedule, they've got Army this week, then they host Tulane off a bye, and then they're at North Texas. They've got five wins right now, so they've got to get one more to get to bowl eligibility. I don't really love this Army team. And one other thing that's worth noting here, Temple played Navy earlier this year, so they have familiarity with the triple option already, and they should have beat them. Like, they should have won that game against Navy at Lincoln Financial. So you got a little bit of that team on sale because they're coming off of a bad performance against East Carolina. You've already seen the triple option. I don't really tend to put Armed Service Academies in the letdown spot, but look, when you beat your rival in Air Force, you've now set up yourself for the Commander-in-Chief Trophy game in middle of December. I think this is an opportunity to maybe look to go against Army here. So if you can get that full seven, Circa has a seven right now if you're listening and you're out in a state that has Circa. I took seven with Temple on the road at Army, and we'll see if the Owls are hooting in that spot. A couple other ones, Will. I'm just going to fade Virginia until I win. Look, I was on Cal last week, one of the worst beats I've ever had gambling. I was on UNC 2 weeks ago, catching 10.5 against this Virginia team. They should have won the game outright. Like, the win that they had a couple weeks ago was such a great spot, and a lot of us were on Virginia on a Friday night against Florida State. And they win that in overtime. I mean, this team has now won three games in overtime. They get a miraculous cover. I think Wake Forest is a good football team. I know they got absolutely curb stomped last week by Florida State. I thought that was a brutal spot to head down to Tallahassee after you beat SMU in that crazy 13-12 win. I think Jake Dickert's done a really good job. So if you can get the seven again to show back up, right now we're sitting at 6.5. I think Wake Forest is live against Virginia. It's a night game. I think you're going to get a decent effort from Wake Forest here. So maybe it's just my boneheadedness on this Virginia team and trying to fade them. And then lastly, Will, the spot of all spots this week is in your backyard, and I think you know it. The Rent is hosting Duke. And think about the situation that Duke is currently sitting in. Duke right now, coming off of a win, 46-45, they got so fortunate with an absolutely brutal pass interference call against Clemson. They score the touchdown. They get the two-point conversion. Next week, Duke plays Virginia in essentially what is a make-or-break game for both of these teams to go to the ACC championship game. You look at some of the tiebreakers. And that's why, look, the price is already baked in. The situation's baked into the price, excuse me. So you saw this thing open like 13 at FanDuel. It got bulldozed down to like 8.5. It's slowly creeping back up to 9.5 here, Will. And you know it. I'm sure the streets of Connecticut are talking about Jim Mora's squad, right, Will? I mean, this squad's pretty good, and it's such a great spot for them and such a weird one for Duke. So maybe we get 10 again. I wouldn't be surprised if we did, because we are paying a little bit of a tax on UConn here. But Joey Fagnano, baby. Let's throw some touchdowns against the Blue Devils here. Maybe we can get double digits. But this is the spot of all spots this weekend. UConn catching a decent-sized number against Duke when they're going out of conference, when they're in the thick of it. They are in the thick of an ACC championship run.
Couple quick ones before we get you out of here. Who do you think, handicapping the Group of Five representative, the American's a mess. It's a lot of fun. You know, maybe North Texas, because they don't have to play some of these other teams. San Diego State's pretty good defensively. They got that win over Cal. I don't know. You tell me, how do you handicap this this Group of Five representative?
Yeah, I'll start with San Diego State real quickly. I actually didn't mention this game. I'll mention it here in just a moment. So San Diego State was 22-1 last week to make the college football playoff. That's down to 13-1. They have one loss. They're really good defensively. And, you know, for those who didn't see it, Maddox Madsen is out for a while, the starting quarterback for Boise State. And the drop-off from him to the backup is catastrophic. I mean, they got absolutely worked by Fresno State on their home turf. Next week, San Diego State hosts Boise State. That is an enormous game for that conference. The Mountain West is down this year. UNLV got exposed last week. They're terrible defensively. I think New Mexico's a capable bunch. Hawaii goes to San Jose State, couldn't stop a nosebleed in that fun one late night, 45-38. But I'll say this about San Diego State. I don't think it's going to be a look-ahead spot to Boise. But you got to go out to the island, and you got to take on this offense in Hawaii. And I mentioned this number on the College Football Betting Podcast the other day, but I'm going to pull it up here real quickly. Because San Diego State, as you mentioned, they've got a very good defense, and they deserve all the credit for what Sean Lewis has been able to do. But it is worth noting, since that Cal game, you look at some of the offenses that they've played, Will, and it is pretty ugly. NIU, 134th in pass offense. Colorado State, 104. Nevada, 125. Fresno, 112. Wyoming, 102. Hawaii can't really stop much defensively, but Micah Alahato and those wide receivers have been lighting it up. And it is also worth noting, Hawaii, since Timmy Chang has become the head coach there in 2022, they are the best cover team at home in college football at 18-6-1 against the spread. They're actually tied with Alabama, believe it or not. So if we're going against Alabama as a home in that home spot. But I think 7's a little bit too much. I took 7.5. FanDuel popped to 7.5 minus 20 earlier this week. So I took that with Hawaii. Look, could that San Diego State defense just stifle them? It's certainly possible, but as we've seen, traveling out to the island is always tricky. But yeah, San Diego State intriguing at 13-1 to win that conference. They'll more than likely beat Boise State twice, I guess, if they were to run the table. They have to run the table. The one that's kind of fascinating to me, Will, as you mentioned the American and the possibility of them kind of just eating each other up, it's James Madison. So James Madison loses by 2 touchdowns to Louisville earlier this year. They were up at halftime. This is a team that doesn't really have great substance to the resume, but if they're just kind of lurking around at 12-1 and the American kind of continues to eat each other up a little bit, that's where it could become intriguing. So I think South Florida still has a pretty decent shot to end up representing the G5, and I think they'll get credit for their win over Florida and also a dominant win at North Texas on a Friday night when they put up 63. But I think James Madison, 4-1, and San Diego State, 13-1, are two kind of interesting options for the G5 as this whole thing plays out.
Last one before we get out of here. You could be as brief or as detailed as you want. Any inkling in terms of what's going to happen with these coaching vacancies? You know, maybe Clemson opens up too, but you're going to have a lot of them. You already have some that are high profile. I'm sure you're going to see some pro coaches come down. I don't know. I mean, you're going to have a lot of musical chairs, a lot of chairs moving around here. What are you looking for? What do you expect? Or you're just kind of going to wait and see what happens?
No, I think it's certainly, as college football fans, it's kind of fascinating to see how this all is going to play out. And I do think, you know, going back to the G5 conversation, right, Tulane plays Memphis on Friday night, and we saw them go down to UTSA and get smoked by the Roadrunners, and you start to wonder, is that locker room here in the whispers? I mean, John Summerall, the head coach of Tulane, seems destined, Will, for one of these jobs in the SEC. So, okay, is that creeping into the locker room, the Lane Kiffin situation, right? Is he just going to play this up so he can get a big, big payday? I think one of the people that has really been benefited by this whole situation, honestly, is James Franklin. I mean, James Franklin, I think, is going to have his pick of some pretty good jobs. I know Bruce Feldman's talked about Virginia Tech being an option for him. I think that would make a ton of sense with his ties to the DMV. And if I'm James Franklin, you don't really need the money, right? You've got this offset cash coming in from Penn State, so you could take a little bit of lesser salary, go to Virginia Tech, maybe pump that into the NIL, whatever it may be. So I think that could be a good spot for James Franklin. You know, who are these coaches in the G5 that are gonna make the meteoric rise, right? And I think lastly, Will, is like, how many fan bases ultimately are gonna be disappointed in the guy that they get? Now, it could end up working out well for a program that, you know, gets a coach that you've never heard of and he ends up coaching well. But like, I just look around, like, who's UCLA going to get, right? Like, you think about a couple years ago, Jonathan Smith up at Oregon State was a hot commodity. He goes to Michigan State, he might be fired, right? So, you know, Jed Fish, I think, makes some sense if he's especially able to bring his quarterback Damon Williams with him? Like, if they're a package deal, does a Florida make some sense for Jed Fish? Because I know he's an alum there, so that could certainly be appealing. But you think of these big, big jobs, right? Auburn, LSU, Florida, Penn State. Like, who are they going to get, right? And, you know, Jeff Brohm, is he going to leave his alma mater, Louisville? Is Mike Elko going to leave his alma mater, Vanderbilt? Like, a couple of these rising guys or these hot coaches, Will, they're, in theory, tied to their current job because, hey, we've got a hope that this is where you're from. This is where you, you know, went to school or where you played, whatever it may be. And also, you know, another one that's kind of interesting, I mentioned James Franklin, Virginia Tech. At this point in the year, is Shane Beamer saying, I just want to leave so I can go to Virginia Tech so I could restart the clock? I mean, he was one of the hottest guys in college football a year ago. Their preseason, what, top 10? And now they fired his OC. He might be on the hot seat here. It's so intriguing to see this all play out. And then lastly, I'll say this, Will. Like, you think of a place like Wisconsin, right? They're a disaster this season. And are they just going to have to stick with Luke Fickell because of financial ramifications? And then also, like, who are we going to get? Like, who is the guy that's going to save this once proud program in the Midwest? So, yeah, I am so curious to see how this all plays out because I think we're already up to, what, 11 in-season firings in college football? And it just feels like there are more guys certainly on the hot seat. Like, is Mike Norvell going to save his job at Florida State? Another one to keep an eye on there. So, I mean, and there's always, Will, lastly, like, there's always guys that we aren't even thinking about that end up getting fired. That's, hey, they went 6-6. We're not happy. We're not renewing his contract, or, you know, he wants out. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out. And, yeah, I'm here for it, man. As long as Marcus Freeman stays in South Bend, I'm good. I know he's been brought up in every single job rumor that is out there. So, you know, we'll see how it all plays out. But, man, it's gonna be messy. It's going to be wild. And then lastly, you think of, like, Lane Kiffin, right? If he wants to leave, okay, when is he going to leave? What if they win a playoff game? Is he going to leave in the middle of a playoff run? Is the school going to be willing to wait until he comes down in January? Man, it's going to be pretty fascinating to see how it all plays out.
Tim, you're the best, man. Can you believe college basketball has started? Are you as unprepared, or not unprepared, but just caught off guard as everybody seems to be? It's just hard to believe it. It's already underway. Some really good-looking freshmen. I watched a lot of it on Monday night. Kind of wish they balanced it Monday and Tuesday because they jammed everything into Monday. Now there's nothing on Tuesday, but some incredible freshmen.
That BYU kid, DiBasta, is it DiBasta? DiBasta? He was, man, he looked every bit the part, man. That was a lot of fun. Arizona put on a show. I mean, the two games in Vegas were phenomenal. You know, I don't know what Villanova's going to be. I mean, I know a couple teams in the Big Ten put up like a billion points. Michigan put up like 120-some-odd points against Oakland. Ohio State threw up a big, big old number. How about the upset of all upsets? Shout out to the island, Hawaii Pacific, going to Boise State, a D2 team beating Boise State. They were stunned in Idaho on Monday night.
Tim, you're the best, man. Where can we find you?
You can find me everywhere, man. At One Tim Murray, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Also, VSiN Primetime, which is a show that obviously you come on and co-host from time to time as well. And then Saturday mornings, check out the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show, 9 to noon Eastern.
Tim, you're the best, man. Appreciate it. All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Tim Murray. Enjoyed that conversation. We'll be back Friday. See you then.